Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about opening our eyes to a new view of life. I'm glad you joined us today. You know, each day we live, we have a series of choices of where we spend our time and what to think and how to go about our day. Some people choose to fill their day with worthwhile things like uplifting podcasts. This is why I love podcasts so much. Listening to podcasts has been a huge blessing in my life. This podcast is born from a deep desire to help us all live a happier life, and the firm belief that a powerful way to make that happen is to open our eyes to new ways of seeing life. And we believe at the foundation of our behavior and beliefs is the way we see the world and ourselves in it. So hopefully today in this time together, you can get a bit of a new perspective of how to think and live better. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about opening our eyes. I'd like to talk about our belief window. You know, the Japanese have a saying, Ino naka no kowazu to kai oshirazu. And it means a frog in a well cannot conceive of the ocean. Well, like this frog, if all we ever did was based on what we could clearly see, we'd probably do very little. But we have within us the power to imagine, to see, to envision ourselves differently. When I was younger, one of the visiting professors in my MBA class was the late Dr. Stephen Covey, the author of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It was a pleasure to learn from him firsthand. One day, at the end of one of his presentations about how we can change and live more consistent with our values, Dr. Covey invited one last question. One person stood and asked him how he was so confident that those of us in the room who were weak of heart and had failed to change before could leave from the time with him and change, could really change for good. I'll never forget his answer. Here's what he said. He asked us to close our eyes. We all did. Then he asked us to imagine, to see in our mind's eye that we were separating from our own body. He said, as you rise above where you're sitting, imagine you can see the top of your head. I imagined this. He then said, now visualize yourself rising higher so you can see the top of the heads of people seated on your row. I did. He then said, imagine you've risen so high that you're bumping up against the ceiling and you can see everyone in the room. I imagined it. He then said, open your eyes. And he taught us a powerful principle. He said, you have a gift, a God-given gift that no other living thing has. This ability to imagine, to see yourself in a situation other than the one that you're in. This is a gift. You can imagine doing or being something other than what you are today or what you do today. So the next time you're in a situation in which you need to act with changed behavior, imagine it first. And this imagining will mirror the eventual actions that you will take as you gain strength to change. Well, I started to put his suggestion to work. I would imagine myself acting or being or doing in changed ways. And I started to put on the power of opening your eyes to the fact that if you can see yourself in your life differently, then you are on the path to real change. I know from experience that this is true. Our belief, our view of the world, what we can imagine does dictate our actions. Now, to see the power of this principle firsthand, we don't have to go any further than Clemson University and Coach Dabo Swinney. Growing up, Dabo's father was a chronic alcoholic. As a boy, many nights, when the screaming and abuse got to be too much, he would crawl out of his window and retreat onto the roof to escape. At age 13, his parents got a divorce. Dabo and his mom moved into one apartment after another and were often evicted because she couldn't find a way to pay rent. Dabo wanted to be the first in his family to attend college, so he worked hard in high school. He was accepted to the University of Alabama, and he and his mother moved together to Tuscaloosa. They lived in a one-room apartment while Dabo attended school. Dabo had a dream to play wide receiver in college football. So, without a scholarship, he tried out for the Crimson Tide. He made the team, then the travel squad, then a starting role, and a scholarship. He was part of the 1992 team that won the national championship. As he graduated, so did his goals in life. His goal to be a head coach by the age of 40. So after graduating from college, he became a graduate assistant for the college football team. There, after 9 years as a lower-level assistant coach at Alabama, he and the other coaches were fired. For 2 years, he worked outside of football, wondering if his dream, if his vision would ever become reality. Then a call out of the blue from a friend. Come to Clemson and be the recruiting coordinator and receivers coach. He did. He was a natural with people. His personal power was attractive. Potential recruits responded to him, and Clemson's recruiting improved dramatically under his leadership. In 2008, the head coach resigned halfway through the season, and the athletic director picked Dabo to be the interim coach. When a head coach resigns, typically the defensive or offensive coordinator takes over. But Dabo had done such a good job as the recruiting coordinator and lower-level coach, he was given the opportunity. He was told the job was his to earn. At the end of the season, he would be given an interview, but he was not guaranteed the head coaching job. He had 48 days left in the season to prove to the world he belonged as a head coach. But the critics came out of the woodwork. He hadn't been a head coach. He hadn't led an offense. He was only 39 years old. He had no proven track record. Even Sweeney started to buy into the rhetoric. I'm too young. The system won't let me make it. Is this really what I want to do? Well, that first week, Coach Sweeney couldn't sleep. He wouldn't sit in the coach's office to work. You see, he believed it really wasn't his. He wasn't the head coach. He was the interim coach. Plus, he couldn't do the job anyway. That's what everyone was saying, right? When he did walk into the head coach's office, he felt a bit like an imposter. Imagine, here he was on the verge of his dream, with the opportunity of a lifetime ahead of him, and he was going to give up because of doubt. Have you ever been on the verge of something great, stopped and not started because of doubt? Have you ever given in to your own set of beliefs that I can't do this, or I'm not as talented as that person, or I can't change? Have you ever started something you knew could change your life, but when things didn't go as planned, you started to doubt your decision? Well, if any of this has happened to you, take a lesson from Coach Sweeney. As Sweeney tells the story 3 days before his first game, early in the morning, he pulled into the parking lot. Now, as a recruiting coordinator, you don't have an assigned parking spot. That morning, the head coach's parking spot was available, but Dabo hadn't been parking there. He didn't see himself as the head coach. So, in the middle of uncertainty, for whatever reason, he pulled his car into the head coach's parking space that morning, something he had never done, as if to say, I might step up to my deserved position. In the pre-dawn darkness, his headlights illuminated the parking space's number, 88, the same number he wore as a wide receiver at the University of Alabama. He took it as a positive sign, and he would later say, it was kind of like heaven saying, you can do this. I've got your back. So he walked in that day and settled into the head coach's office. And that day he received an email, a daily devotional. The scripture that day was Revelations 3:8. For I know what you have done, and I have opened a door for you that no one can shut, the scripture said. Sweeney said that when the email showed up, a feeling of peace surrounded him, and along with it, the belief that he belonged. And with a new view on his belief window, Clemson would go on to beat Boston College, trounce South Carolina, and finish the season with 4 out of 5 wins. And Dabo became the head coach of the Clemson Tigers at age 40. In the years since, he's been one of the winningest coaches in college football and has won a national championship several times. Now, the truth is, your reality is a reflection of your strongest belief. Belief is a powerful, powerful tool, and it drives our life more than we realize. Let me give you a simple example. Let's assume you had a vision. It was a clear vision, and in that vision, you saw your 9-year-old son. He would grow up to be a world-renowned heart surgeon. I mean, you knew it was going to happen. After that, would you treat him differently? Would you enroll him in more after-school science classes? When he failed his first science test, would you let him quit? No, of course not. But it is your belief that would guide you and him eventually to bring about what you saw in your mind's eye. And the same goes for us. We have a view of the world and our place in the world, and this dictates how we think, how we act, and who we eventually become. Imagine there's a bracket surgically attached to the back of your head. And connected to that bracket is a thick metal wire that extends up and over the top of your head. It then curves down inches in front of your forehead. And there it secures in place a frame. And this frame holds a window. And through this window, you see the world. No matter where you turn, the window is always in front of your view. This is your belief window. You can't actually see your belief window because it's invisible, but it's there. We all have one. And your belief window is always with you, shaping, coloring, and filtering what you see and sense. Each day, oceans of data and information pass through your window, helping you make sense of the world. And through it, you interpret relationships, meaning, and feelings about yourself and others. Well, the tricky thing about your belief window is that over time you've placed perceptions on your window that you believe are true, whether they reflect reality or not. Through your experiences and interpretation of social feedback, you've fashioned hundreds of perceptions of yourself. I'm smart or stupid, beautiful or ugly, creative or dull. And regardless of whether these perceptions are false, they guide your thinking. Because you believe and perceive it, you act accordingly. The danger is that erroneous perceptions on our belief window can cause great harm and confusion. So unless our belief window truly reflects reality, things as they are, not as we wish they were or think they should be, we can fool ourselves and damage our chances for growth in any activity or relationship we undertake. Remember, if you like, you can take out your belief window and replace it with another. You can replace your view with a view that more aligns with whatever truth you value. And if you decide not to purposefully change your belief window, it's likely your brain will do it for you. And instead of you, your subconscious will take on the job of overseeing your view of the world, your relationships, and yourself. Remember, belief windows are incredibly powerful. They've shaped history. They've toppled dictators. They've elected presidents. They've fostered families, destroyed societies, and built empires. And if we can understand how to create and sustain true beliefs on our belief window, imagine the power we could harness for good in our lives and the lives of those around us. When Tyler Vigen finished law school a few years ago, he did something really fun. He went on the search for identical twins. Not twins as you and I think of twins, but twins in the terms of data sets. He looked for completely unrelated data sets that showed perfect correlation with other data. For example, he found perfect correlation between per capita cheese consumption and deaths by those who got tangled in their bed sheets. He found the same correlation between the number of new Nicolas Cage movies in a year and deaths by swimming pool drownings. From Tyler's view, you would conclude the more Nick Cage movies that are released in any given year, the more people drown themselves in swimming pools. But this conclusion doesn't reflect reality, does it? Well, the same goes for the absurd conclusions we sometimes place on our belief window. They may seem correlated, but they're no closer to reality than Tyler's research. But we buy into them because we think there is a correlation. For example, you tried to start a new business. But the first number of people you talk to showed no interest. So you conclude it doesn't work or you're not very good. But the truth is, it does and can work. And you are good. But maybe you haven't talked to the right people in the right way at the right time. And even more, the truth is, some people just say no to anything. Likewise, each minute of the day, our brain is interpreting data and trying to relate it to other data, trying to draw correlations like Tyler's research. And sometimes our brains make connections or draw conclusions that may not be real. They may seem correlated, but they really aren't. Sometimes our established patterns of thinking bring unrelated factors together and treat them as fact when they really are not. Not long ago, I had a conversation with my college-age daughter. I suggested she take an accounting class, to which she immediately replied, "I don't think so, Dad. I'm not good at accounting." I thought, how do you know? You've never taken an accounting class. When I asked her this, she said, "I just know, Dad." And I wondered what belief she was holding on her belief window that caused her to believe she wasn't good at accounting. As we talked, I discovered she had struggled to easily understand concepts in her math class. So she had concluded that since she struggled grasping math concepts, she wouldn't be good at accounting because accounting had something to do with numbers. But reality was drastically different than her beliefs. First, most people, almost all people, struggle with new math concepts. It takes time and repetition and experience until these concepts make sense or are easy to grasp. And the truth is, accounting is a language, not really math. Yes, you must be able to add and subtract, but accounting requires you to learn the language of business and understand how to categorize things. Accounting is more about learning the structure and language of business and less to do with math. So as a sophomore in college, she took her first accounting class. The class was difficult, as it is for most students, but she did exceptionally well. And as a result, her belief window changed, and so did her minor and other things that she chose in college. What are the dangers of incorrect beliefs on our belief windows? Well, we don't attempt, and we continue to do less than we possibly could. We don't change. We live with less than we might otherwise. Sometimes we get used to living with less than, don't we? But I know this, you are not put on this earth to be less than. You are not defined by where you've been, only by where you're going. And you may have tried and failed, so what? From this point on, you can see with a new belief window, with new eyes. You are capable, strong enough, smart enough, and tough enough. Your beliefs can change, and that will enable you to change. It's time to replace your beliefs on your belief window and begin to live the life that you can live. So, how do you open your eyes to the truth of what should be on your belief window? Well, the minute you understand that you have a belief window and that it's real, you'll start to challenge the beliefs that you hold on that window. And that challenging will change your life. This process of challenging, evaluating, and deciding what's on your belief window allows you to start to see how you can change. By challenging your beliefs and your belief window, you'll start to see how to be proactive rather than passively following whatever wrongs life has placed on your belief window. You'll start to think objectively about life. This ability to step back and review your own actions in life will allow you to put a new window on your perspective. You know, in 2015, Sarah Bareilles wrote a Broadway play called Waitress. And in that play, the hit song, She Used to Be Mine, is sung by the lead character, a waitress whose life has become something she didn't expect. And in a self-reflective moment, the character sings, "It's not what I asked for. Sometimes life just slips through the back door and carves out a person and makes you believe it's all true." Then she sings to herself and says, "And now I've got you. You're not what I asked for. And if I'm honest, I know I would give it all back for a chance to start over and rewrite an ending or two for the girl that I once knew." It's true. Life sometimes slips through the back door and carves out a person that sometimes you don't recognize. But if that has happened to you like it has to me, doesn't mean our life has to stay this way. The minute that you challenge the way you think and begin to challenge the beliefs you hold on your belief window, watch the change that will come to you, even if you thought you could never change. Now, no doubt you've heard the story of the overweight man who needed to lose 40 pounds. His biggest hindrance was that he drove by his favorite bakery every day on his way to work, and he had no willpower to resist stopping and getting his favorite pastries. He was saved when the road in front of the bakery closed for construction for a time, and he had to take an alternative route to work. He started to lose some weight. Several weeks later, however, the road reopened. And on the first morning driving on the newly opened road, he was battling his willpower. Finally, he decided that he would drive past the bakery. And if there were no empty parking spaces directly in front of the building, he would not stop. He'd keep driving to work. Well, almost an hour later, he showed up at home with an empty donut box and pastry remnants all over his suit. And his wife asked, "Honey, what happened?" He said, "Well, I drove past the bakery and all the parking spaces in front were full. But the fifth time around the block, one opened up and I had to stop." We often think that, like this man, we're forever subject to our habits and mental triggers. And you may be asking the simple question, really? By working to put new beliefs on my belief window, my behavior will begin to change? And the answer to that is yes. But we have to understand how our mind sometimes works against us. You see, without changing your conscious beliefs, you're subject to how your brain likes to work. For example, suppose you set a goal to lose weight by exercising in the morning each day. On the first day when the alarm goes off, your brain defense mechanisms immediately go to work. You think, I'm tired, but I should get up because I need to lose weight. The minute you think the thought about weight, your deep-rooted anxiety about weight loss is activated. That anxiety exists maybe because you've repeatedly looked in the mirror and thought, I look overweight. I look horrible. I need to exercise, but it's so hard. I can't do it. And you have these thought waves of anxiety sweep over you. So anytime you think about weight loss, your brain associates weight loss with negative feelings of anxiety. So when the alarm goes off and you think about weight loss, the anxiety wave comes. To avoid the anxiety, what do? You roll over and sleep to make the anxiety go away. And your own thinking over time, your own belief about losing weight, that it's too hard, keeps you from doing what you know needs to be done. Sounds crazy, right? But this happens to average people like you and me in different ways all the time. But if we replace our belief window with beliefs like, exercising will help me think clearly, sleep better, and live longer, or I love how I feel when I'm done exercising, this change in your belief window will overcome the patterns of anxiety that you've had in the past. So if you and I can just start the process of purposefully placing beliefs on our belief window, these beliefs start to be tested. And this reality testing enables us to control our impulses a bit more, to act independently and grow. So again, how do you place correct beliefs on your belief window? Well, on purpose. In a matter of speaking, you talk to yourself. You talk truth and encouragement. And this may be opposite of your current beliefs on your belief window. A study recently published in the Psychology of Sport and Exercise talked about 72 tennis players who took part in 5 rounds of play as part of a research study. One half were taught to practice positive self-talk. The other half did not. Though both groups followed the same training program, only the experimental one was asked to practice self-talk. By the final assessment, the self-talkers had improved their game more than the non-self-talkers. And incidentally, the self-talkers also had significantly reduced anxiety as they played. Recently, a meta-analysis looking at the validity of self-talk strategy showed the same thing in 32 different sports. By talking to ourselves, we become more deliberate and able to control the beliefs on our belief window. But how we talk is critical. Positive, truthful, and encouraging. What we say to ourselves, when we say it, and how has a tremendous impact on our self-esteem, beliefs, and our overall sense of worth. Let me give you a simple example. Let's consider again our decision to get up at 5:30 and exercise. When the alarm goes off, your brain starts to give you reasons to defer, delay, or decline. But your self-talk may go something like this. I'm a person of great worth. I'm exercising because it clears my mind, empowers me with strength, and because I'm making something of myself. With this type of deliberate self-talk, the beliefs on your belief window will begin to drive your life. You know, when I was a young father with 5 children at home between the ages of 3 and 15, I was working long hours trying to provide for my family. I was stressed, I was making poor decisions, and I was not being the kind of father I needed to be. The belief on my belief window was that the traits I had inherited from my parents were unchangeable for me. My parents were task-oriented, so was I. When I was stressed, I would focus on what my kids had done rather than on them as people. When I would come home from work, I'd be anxious, and the kids were in chaos, and they hadn't done what they had been asked to do, and I wouldn't even say hello before I started getting after them. Usually, bikes were scattered in the yard, the garage had trash on the floor, the house was in a bit of a mess, and I would start barking to get these things cleaned up. As a result, I could feel the distance between me and them was growing, but I didn't know how to change. My belief window held the belief that I couldn't change. Then I spent a two-day seminar with my former visiting professor, Dr. Covey, some 10 years after graduate school. Here's what he taught me that day. He taught us that for everyone, there is a space between the trigger of our behavior or stimulus and how we choose to respond to that behavior. And in this space in time, we can choose differently. Then he taught something that has changed my life. He said when he taught seminars, when the session was done, he usually had a line of people waiting to ask him questions. And he said usually the questions were how to get someone else to change. He said he always responded with the same answer. If you'll go home and be a light and not a judge, meaning you love, and be kind, and set the example, your influence will grow with others. And he said, focus on what you love about the other person. It was like a bolt of lightning shot through me. So to make sure I put this on my belief window, I had painted over my office door, be a light and not a judge. And it wasn't easy at first. But when I would come home from work, I would sit in my car and remind myself that there's a space between the trigger and response in which I can choose to act differently. I reminded myself to be a light and not a judge. I would think about what I loved about my kids. Then I would walk in the house. At first, the chaos was still chaos. The school bags and other things were scattered on the floor. But I stepped over them and focused on my kids. I tried to be a light, positive and kind. I tried to focus on what I loved about them. And I tried to leave any of the worries and anxiety and criticism behind. And here's what happened. I saw myself change. The belief on my belief window impacted how I acted, and how I acted started to influence my children. It brought a huge amount of peace into my life and into our life as a result. And don't you know, they were more apt to do what I asked them to do. So, as we end today, remember, we all get incorrect beliefs on our belief window, but you can purposefully change those beliefs. And when you do, and you purposefully seek to follow your new way of seeing yourself and your place in the world, you start the process of real and meaningful change. And watch, you will rise to be a better person than you ever believed possible. Most of all, thanks for being here today. Don't forget to share this podcast with a friend and join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.